He grinned, with his head on one side. But all these things are trivial, until the ill-mannered busybody also finds out that this same English Navy man doesn't know what club-hauling and long-splicing are, either. Even then, I could be entirely mistaken. "Sir," says I, trying to sound furious, "I fail to understand you. I am a British officer, and I hope a gentleman—"
"Oh, I don't doubt it," says he. "But even that isn't conclusive proof that you are a rascal. I just suspect that you're a humbug."
But I couldn't for the life of me prove it. He scratched his ear, grinning like a gargoyle. "And anyway, it's just none of my business. I guess the truth is, I'm a bit of a humbug myself, and feel a kind of duty to other humbugs. Anyway, I'm certainly not fool enough to pass on my ridiculous observations and suspicions to anyone else. I just thought you might be interested to hear about the salt and the bread and so forth. Shall we go and listen to him laying it off about the last minstrel?" I cannot impress too strongly on young fellows that the whole secret of the noble art of survival for a single man lies in knowing exactly when to make your break for safety. I considered this now, with Lincoln smiling down at me sardonically, and decided it was better to brazen things through than to bolt. So I gave him my blandest smile and said, "I confess, sir, that I have no idea what you're talking about. Let us by all means rejoin the company." I kept a bold front, but I was appalled at being discovered, and the rest of that evening passed in a confused panic for me. Eventually, we all took our leave, and Fairbrother carried me off to quarters at the Navy Department, where I spent a sleepless night wondering how I could get out of this latest fix. But Washington was no place to try to decamp, and as it turned out, there was no opportunity, for on the following morning, I was sent back with Fairbrother to his brig. So there was nothing to do but sit out the voyage and make plans for escaping when we reached Louisiana. We dropped anchor at the big bend in the Mississippi River off Customs House Levee, with the whole splendid panorama of New Orleans lights twinkling on either bank. Fairbrother was to take me ashore personally in the morning, when I must give him the slip, so I set about my preparations. First, I went through the clothes which I hadn't worn since I first boarded the Balliol College. There was a superb coat by Greg of Bond Street, in fine plum broadcloth. I had two good pairs of trousers, excellent boots from Todd, a smart grey embroidered waistcoat, several shirts which were beyond redemption, and a fine neckerchief of black China silk. The coat and neckerchief at least could be counted on for what I had in mind, and for the rest, I had 11 gold sovereigns, which would tide me over the beginning at least. I packed everything carefully in my valise, and next morning we were rowed to the Algiers side by 4 bluejackets. The levee and wharves were positively teeming with a tremendous confusion of thousands of busy people, which was just what I wanted. While I was handed ashore, Fairbrother stopped to give orders to the coxswain. I picked up my valise, took 3 steps, and was lost in the throng. When I glanced back, there wasn't a glimpse of Fairbrother and his men. They would be gaping around, no doubt, but it would be an hour or so before they began to suspicion that my disappearance wasn't accidental. Then there would be a tremendous hue and cry. Now, I had considered trying to board an outgoing ship immediately, but that was the first place Fairbrother and his Navy friends would look for me. Anyway, I hadn't passage money, so I had determined to lie low in New Orleans until I could see what was best to be done. I halted on the levee, waited till I spotted a likely-looking craft among the hundreds that were putting in and out along the bank, and asked its rower to carry me over to the north shore. He was a big, grinning nigger with brass rings in his ears, who chattered in a queer mixture of French and English, and in no time at all he set me down on the levee from which you walked up to the old French quarter which is the heart of New Orleans. I paid him in English shillings, which didn't bother him at all, provided it's gold or silver. The Orleanais don't care whose head is on it.